So we are an end-to-end contract automation platform. And what that means is, think of us as the Salesforce for contracts. Day one, we go in, take all your existing contracts, extract key details, so that you can set up reminders, you can run deep searches on them, and you can almost be diligence ready at any given point. Second is, we turn your most used contracts into templates. So with templatizing contracts, business teams are able to create bespoke contracts without any legal help, and legal only jumps in where there is deviation or there are any exceptions.
Hi, wherever you're listening to us, I hope you're doing well. Welcome to Startup Fridays, weekly conversations with accomplished entrepreneurs and VC investors. I'm Hari Arakli, and in this episode, Shashank Bijapur, Madhav Bhagat, and Rohit Saleem talk about how they got to build SpotDraft, which offers a machine learning and AI-based contract lifecycle management platform to legal teams at companies around the world. Founded in 2017, SpotDraft has helped customers process more than 1 million contracts since the company released its first commercial product. Shashank, Madhav, and Rohit bring some heavy-duty experience to their venture, from Harvard Law School and a New York law firm to Carnegie Mellon University and Google, Microsoft, and Yelp, QMath, and Oyster. The first-time entrepreneurs have raised close to $45 million in funding from investors including Process, Premji Invest, Arkham Ventures, Riverwalk, and 0to1 Capital. They've been growing fast, and this year, soon, they expect to hit an ARR of $10 million.
Welcome, guys, to this podcast. Thank you so much for making time for this. Really appreciate your time. And thank you for bearing with me while I set up all of this stuff. Looking forward to our conversation. Maybe you all could start by just walking us through sort of a snapshot, maybe how you all came to start SpotDraft. I mean, the path that brought you to the beginnings of SpotDraft, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So thanks for having us on the podcast. It's really exciting to be here and speaking about our journey. We are SpotDraft. We are an end-to-end contract automation platform. What we do is help businesses create, manage, analyze, and collaborate on contracts. Using SpotDraft, companies see faster turnaround time, a safe place where they can search and manage them, and collaborate on contracts. So think of us as the Salesforce for contracts. My name is Shashank Bijapur. I am the co-founder and CEO of the company.
Yeah, my name is Rohit. I'm the co-founder and chief product officer at SpotDraft.
And yeah, I'm Madhav, and I'm the co-founder and chief technology officer at SpotDraft.
SpotDraft started as a story between two engineers and a lawyer. The lawyer is me. I am now a recovering lawyer. And at some point, I realized that the tools that lawyers used and the systems that they used were archaic and did not mimic some of the other tools that other companies and other departments had. So that sparked the question, people are building self-driving cars, and here we are with copying, pasting words on a contract. And it was a eventful Diwali party where I met Madhav and then eventually Rohit in New York. And that sparked the idea of, let's try and build something out of India for the rest of the world, which is a world-class contract automation platform to solve challenges around contracts.
How long ago was this party?
So this party was, I think, in 2014.
Yeah.
And was this in India or in the US? Where?
It was in New York. So it was a party where there were only designers. And at that point, Madhav and I were the only two non-designers. And we were standing in two corners of the room. So we looked at each other, and it was enough for us to realize that we had to walk out and have our own conversation.
Okay. Can you also all talk a little bit about what you all did before SpotDraft? I mean, like a 1 minute, overview.
Sure. I guess I can start. So Madhav and me, we were like classmates at Carnegie Mellon. after like graduating, during CMU, I'd worked at a couple of big companies like Microsoft and Yelp, which at that time was pre-IPO. But then after I ended up graduating, realized that, you know, wanted to go more into the startup space more than anything else. So worked at a couple of different startups, Rent the Runway and then Oyster, which got acquired by Google, which is when, like, you know, always had the startup bug, but then that was when I decided to sort of really take the plunge, move back to India to start something. Tried a couple of different things in India before eventually, like, you know, teaming up at Madhav and Shashank to do SpotDraft.
Yeah, and I did the opposite, where Rohit went to the small startup to, you know, get that experience, and I went to Google right after college. So for me, it was a different experience, but kind of similar in that we realize that you can't sit in the US because of visa issues and do startups. So I think I moved 1 year before Rohit, and then Rohit also took the plunge and came back here. So it was all just, you know, coming back to India. And this was around the time when India really took off as a startup destination, where SoftBank and all had come in and started like showering money on all these e-commerce companies. And we were sitting there in the US, you know, doing our 9-to-5 jobs, and we're like, oh, what are we doing with our lives? So that was kind of when I decided, okay, let's quit Google and move back. And yeah, once I got here, initially it was like a struggle to figure out really what to do. But then I got a call from Shashank. He's like, actually, I called Shashank and I was like, bro, can you take a look at this contract? I think it's wrong. And then Shashank's like, why does this require so much manual effort? And then we sort of started talking, oh, we could build this, we could build that. And that's really where the SpotDraft journey began.
Do you recall what the contract was about?
Yeah, I do. It was a rental agreement between two Indian parties where the applicable law was Singapore law. So my question to him was, to Madhav was, hey, if there are two Indian parties, can't the machine automatically point out that the applicable law needs to be Indian law? And he said, bro, that's called machine learning. That was sort of the spark around SpotDraft.
Okay. Can you give us a sense of how you figured out that this was actually a bigger problem and there might be an opportunity here to build a business?
Yeah, I think the fact that it's a bigger problem was quite obvious to all of us. Every dollar, for example, at Forbes that comes in or goes out is because somebody signed a piece of paper. So contracts end up becoming the building blocks of any business. Now, in order for that business to work well, so if you look at Forbes, every dollar that comes in or goes out is because somebody signed a piece of paper, and you know, so that makes contracts a building block of any business. But what was also interesting was that universally where we went and asked, and be it a massive Japanese bank or a small Indian startup across the road, everyone said, hey, I have a problem around contracting and I use general purpose tools to solve it. And when we went out in the market and tried to figure out, are there any enterprise-grade tools that help smaller businesses manage contracts, there was absolutely nothing, or it did not solve the purpose for which it was made. So that made us realize that there is a big market. But now, how do you solve that problem was a whole different ballgame. We knew the problem existed, but we didn't know what was the right solution or the first MVP solution to solve that.
How long did it take you to go from there to put together, like you said, your MVP?
So our first MVP was put together in a very hacky way pretty quickly, in about 6 months' time. Mm-hmm. But then unraveling that MVP and building our current product took us another 2 years. So at that point, Rohit came in, and just to give you a little bit of context on what we had built, it was really what GPT is trying to do today, where you can give it a statement and then you can give it a example and say whether this statement holds true for this example. So going into a contract and identifying the good, bad, and ugly and extracting that. Now, it was a great problem to solve. It still is a great problem to solve. But I think what happened was technology did not support the kind of accuracy that was required. Now, if you build a 60% self-driving car, your hands are not going off the steering wheel. So we had a 60% self-driving car. So it really did not give the outcome that a software is supposed to give. And then I think I'd love to hear what Rohit has to say on unraveling and building 2.0.
So on that piece, basically what we were building was we were building AI, and the product itself was AI. And the way it was positioned almost as like, hey, we'll give you the answers, right? And that was like a learning for us, where if you're selling something which is so mission critical and it's positioned as answers, the moment there's even one mistake, right, the end user is going to lose faith in the system, right? And it was a very, very challenging time for us as a business because, and the other thing, a lot of advancements have happened in the machine learning and in the LLM space right now. But back then, it was one of those things where we felt like we were going down this road. Every single, like, and we had a whole bunch of customers, but every single, like, you know, deployment for a customer, there was like, there wasn't really economies of scale. It was just as hard, right? And that wasn't sort of making sense. And I remember it was at that time, me and Madhav, we ended up going to Portugal for Web Summit. And I was like speaking to Madhav about, I'm like, dude, like, what is going on? Like, it just feels like it shouldn't be this hard. You know, like our 10th customer shouldn't be as hard to end up onboarding, driving adoption, all of those as our first customer. And he was saying, he's like, dude, all this is possible, but our big challenge was around data and like essentially like getting data from the customers, creating variations of it and so on and so forth. And when we were at Web Summit, we like really got to thinking about like, how do we actually end up creating a platform? How do you end up creating a system which ends up like generating a whole bunch of data for us, which we can then end up using to train the models the way we wanted to train the models? And at that time, we were also like pretty clear that we were trying to go after this entirely blue ocean, that zero, there wasn't a category that was already created, but we were also like pretty clear that, you know, we wanted to go after somewhat of a pink ocean, not necessarily a red ocean, where there was an existing category built in that particular space, which is how we arrived in the CLMs world, really be able to get a lot of like fans and customers really loving what we're doing. And then you leverage that to actually end up going after the bigger play around like artificial intelligence, machine learning, and, you know.
Yeah, and just to sort of add to that, I think when we built the initial review tool that was purely powered by AI and we were onboarding customers, what we realized the biggest challenge was that even the customers don't have contracts that aren't compliant with their guidelines. So for the AI to learn what's bad, we need to show it what's bad. And the customer didn't have those readily available. So they would spend, you know, a lot of time going through people's inboxes to find that first version that they then negotiated on. And that was really what we felt the big challenge was. Like, if we don't have access to the first version on the platform, we'll always be running after the customer to give us that data. And that is the scaling sort of bottleneck. So that's where we decided, you know, how do we get all the data from the customer on the platform so that we know what's version one and what's the final execution version. And we can then look at the differences between those versions to really train the AI to say, oh, this is a clause or a provision that you don't agree with, because we've seen that you always go and negotiate on it. And that is really where we decided, okay, we need to first build a CLM so that this data is getting captured on the platform, and then we can build AI on top of it, because now we have access to these things, as opposed to, you know, having to go and manually ask you to look through millions of different emails to get, you know, enough data to be able to train the AI. In parallel, you know, with GPT-3, 4, and ChatGPT, what has happened is that just the ability of the machine to understand and answer these questions has become significantly, like, multiple orders of magnitude better. So what we had done, you know, 2 years back was to train our own model that understood legal. And now with these larger language models, they understand not just legal, but other things in the world as well. So we are able to leverage that to really solve these problems without having to train custom models from the ground up, and just by fine tuning or prompting it correctly. And that's something that, you know, we were in fact using GPT-3 before ChatGPT came out and all the hype happened. So in a lot of ways, it's good to see sort of the industry catch up, but now it's also in a place where everyone is doing it. And so we have to really figure out not just what the moat is, but what the user experience is that truly drives value, because there's a dime or a dozen startups and apps that will do, you know, generate a contract for me. But do you really care about generating a contract when really it's going to be your lawyer who's generating the contract? So now the problem statements have changed, but it's a very exciting time, and we are super excited to, you know, be using these technologies to drive, you know, value for our customers.
When you first came up with your, after your 6 months, you came up with your first version. Can you talk about what customers could do with that? I mean, did you start commercializing at that point? What could they do with that? And then
we actually commercialized at that point. We had our first MVP was we had about four or five big banks use us, and the core product was the ability to upload an NDA and identify the pieces of the NDA that met their internal standards and did, or partially met them or did not meet them. So think of it almost like a heat map for your contract. Now, you know, adding to what Madhav and Rohit said, the data that we got, let's look at, let's say, Walmart as an example. All contracts that Walmart would sign would almost be things that work for them. So, and our job was to, the job of the AI was to figure out what did not work. Now, you never had those contracts, which is where we built the editor. But the first, you know, MVP was go into a contract, tell me which parts of this contract work for me, which don't, which in legal terms is automatically, quote unquote, redlining the contract.
Mm. And if you contrast that with what you're able to do today or what your customers are able to do today, give us a sense of, I mean, the level of automation that they can achieve and the kinds of benefits they're extracting out of using your tech.
Yeah, absolutely. So on, so we are an end-to-end contract automation platform. And what that means is think of us as the Salesforce for contracts. Day one, we go in, take all your existing contracts, extract key details so that you can set up reminders, you can run deep searches on them, and you can almost be diligence ready at any given point of time. You can, for example, if you wanted to find out, show me contracts where limitation of liability is greater than $100,000, but applicable law is the state of New York, you can now run that without just doing a control F across all your contracts, right? Second is we turn your most used contracts into templates. The way contracting is done is either business goes to legal and says, hey, these are my terms, can you draft me up a contract? Or legal tells business, here is a folder filled with contracts, fill it up. Both of which, one has a problem of being a bottleneck, legal becomes a bottleneck, and the other one is a risk to the business because business teams really aren't trained to do contracts. So with templatizing contracts, business teams are able to create bespoke contracts without any legal help, and legal only jumps in where there is deviation or there are any exceptions. Built into this is a one-of-its-kind editor that is purpose-built for editing, negotiating, collaborating, and creating version control over contracts. And lastly, all of this is stored in one safe house where you can run reports. If any of your listeners have been in a board meeting where the legal team presented their worldview for the quarter, it was always a PowerPoint and never an Excel sheet. Getting a data-driven legal team is what teams are able to achieve because of the fact that SpotDraft really automates and also almost measures their throughput.
Just for a sort of a layperson's understanding of, you know, the big problem that you're solving for your customers, I mean, what's a good way of illustrating that? I mean, world over, and I'm thinking you're a SaaS company, you've got customers around the world plugging into you, and increasingly you'll have global customers. So how many different kinds of contracts are there that you are tackling? Are they in the tens of thousands? Are they in millions? Give us a sense of that.
Yeah, they're in a few million right now.
Okay.
So we had one very large ed tech company last year execute almost 80,000 contracts on SpotDraft without adding a single person to the legal team. Now, that just shows the kind of change that we are able to bring in. A SaaS company, you know, would take about 8 days to complete an MSA. Now they're able to do it within the hour because SpotDraft is able to come in. The change that our customers talk to us about is almost like them, 10 years ago, standing on the road, waving, saying, hey, taxi, and try to get a taxi versus now being able to, call an Uber with the press of a few buttons. It's transformational.
So the templates of contracts itself are in the millions, is it? Or
so the contracts are in millions, the templates are in a few thousand.
Okay, so around the world, if you consider the loss of the land of different countries, would still be in the thousands.
So we actually are not a legal services company, we're a SaaS company. So what we do is we take, and each one of them has their own flavor and version of contract. Now, any user is able to take those contracts and convert them into actionable questions and answers that turn into customized contracts. So we don't provide the contract ourselves. We provide the platform where these contracts can be automated.
And in terms of the tech, I would think that you've made it easy for them to plug into your systems, but it can speak back to whichever part of their databases that needs to, wherever they need to find the information that needs to go into these contracts. Give us a sense of how your technology, helps them or speaks with their tech and allows them to find the info they need.
Yeah. So the way I would sort of think about it, right, is like if you look at contract lifecycle management, right, that's a very, very old category that exists, right? In fact, I think it was back in 2003, SAP acquired this company called Ariba, which was in billions of dollars, essentially. So the way we look at like what SpotDraft is we like to think of ourselves as this layer that ends up allowing for the entire organization to leverage the legal team's expertise without actually being a drain on the legal team's time. And as Shashank said earlier, that we had a company that ended up executing over 80,000 contracts without adding a single other person onto the legal team, which is huge, right? If SpotDraft didn't end up existing, that would be like almost a dozen lawyers that they would have had to end up like onboarding to actually making that happen. And when I say this, right, in terms of like, hey, being this layer to end up leveraging the legal team's expertise, that comes in a few different areas. One is like, and what I mean by a few different areas is different teams have different needs for the legal team. So when you think about it as sales, right, they need like sales contracts processed and executed on the platform. When you think about partnerships, it's partnership agreements, HR departments, they need employment agreements like processed and like stored in one centralized place. All these different departments have a need from legal and have a need around contracts, and we solve for that. And how we end up solving for this, which is different from every other player out there, is that we have, like, our goal isn't to get everyone in the company to use SpotDraft and to come onto SpotDraft. Instead, our goal is essentially having SpotDraft be available in the tools that are used by these various companies and departments. So sales teams world over, they don't end up coming to SpotDraft to end up getting their work done. They end up using the SpotDraft plugin that's available on Salesforce, HubSpot, Zoho, et cetera, to get their job done and get contracting done. They receive a new contract from the counterparty. They can upload it directly via Salesforce and it gets routed to the legal team and they'll be able to track the progress of it within Salesforce itself. When it comes to HR, we have integration with Greenhouse, Bamboo HR, Lever, Darwinbox, et cetera, et cetera. Some of them are in progress, but those are things that we do have so that people can, the HR team can end up getting their job done without actually learning this entirely new system. And taking that strategy almost like really helped us in a lot of ways to actually grow this business a lot faster because I don't know if you know, but the biggest challenge whenever you're introducing a new product, like for a somewhat mature company, because we're not going after the super small micro startups that are out there. We're going after companies once they've reached a particular sort of scale. And the biggest challenge that usually exists is around change management. But because we have all these integrations and because we're able to enable these functions and teams to actually leverage the power of SpotDraft without actually changing too much of their process, we're able to like roll out SpotDraft a lot faster than what the industry average is, right? So Yeah.
Yeah, and just to add one thing there, which I think Rohit sort of glossed over, which is very, very important and powerful, is that, you know, when a sales team is in Salesforce or in whatever tool they're using, they're already filling in a lot of information, like who's the counterparty, you know, what is the deal size, which geography they're in. And a lot of times what ended up happening and what we saw is that, you know, they then need to copy it into the CLM to generate the contract. It's a source of errors. You know, you manage to copy the currency, but not, you know, the value, but not which currency it's in. And now your contract is in INR versus it should have been in USD. So what we do to solve for that is we not only have an integration that lives inside Salesforce, but you can actually, from within an opportunity or a deal, click create a contract and we'll pull that information from Salesforce. And that's where the power lies, because imagine a complex MSA where you need, you know, 20 different things. Those things are already filled in Salesforce. We will pull those 20 things, put it in the contract, and you have the first version within seconds. You don't even need to copy it. And we take it a step further. Now, maybe during negotiation, you know, you said, oh, we're not going to give you this feature for $100. We're going to give it to you for $90. Well, it's updated in the contract, but is it updated in Salesforce? So what we do is you update it in the contract. We'll actually send that data back to Salesforce so that all your reporting that's happening there is still up to date, right? And this can happen not just with one application, but with many. So you start with Salesforce to create your contract and you end with your ERP to actually execute it or operationalize it. We can pass the data over to the ERP as well, and it'll always be the same thing that's written in the contract. So you don't have different teams going back to the contract, reading the same contract over and over again to understand what they need to do. And that is how, you know, the EdTech company was able to do 80,000, because they actually integrated with our APIs, with their, you know, tool that they have built internally to get that information into the tool and onboard educators within, you know, days. Earlier it would take them weeks. Now it usually takes them less than a day, actually. So this
actually, great point, Madhav, and this actually solves a few problems. First is adoption. Biggest challenge with any new software is I've got to learn one more thing. But now you don't, because you play within the same playground that you're used to playing, maybe within a Salesforce, but now you're getting a return, a contract return much faster. Second is it also avoids any slippage of data. There have been, you know, multi-million dollar companies that are built around just ensuring adoption of, you know, making sure that CRMs are updated regularly. That becomes automated completely. And lastly, it also creates one seamless source of information, and SpotDraft ends up becoming the source of truth for anything related to a contract. So you may have signed that employment agreement once, and you may have payslips and, you know, bonuses that are being paid out. But if you had to verify if these are correct, you would go back to the contract.
So I was going to, you spoke about it a little bit, and I was going to ask you about who today are your target customers. You said that they have had to reach a certain level of maturity. So give us a sense of who your target customers are today.
Sure, I can take that and do jump in where. So the way we sort of look at it, right, is like, and again, this is sort of like lessons we learned along the way, because when we started out, it was kind of like every company out there has contracts. Everyone can be a customer, right? But hard lessons. Right now, we end up going after companies the moment they end up reaching a particular scale where there's a need for an in-house counsel. And specifically, the moment they end up hiring a general counsel, that's when they actually end up becoming like ready for something like this. And we know that they're also serious about like creating a process change to actually end up making the entire organization a lot more efficient, especially around like contracting. So that's what I would say, like, you know, what our entry point was. And that's where we got a lot of our early customers as well. And then now we're like steadily moving up market as well. We have a bunch of really large companies as well with very, very sophisticated teams like Airbnb and so on using SpotDraft as well. But that's where like our sweet spot was initially. And now we're like steadily moving up market over there.
If I had to say that what is common amongst all our customers or most of our customers, I would say that they have a legal team of at least one. They are somewhere in the range of about 200 to about 5 to 7,000 employees. And there is either no contracting system or a suboptimal contracting system of record that exists. And they tend to have a fairly sophisticated sales workflow and a fairly sophisticated HR workflow, all of which lead to, again, volumes of contracting, but being dealt with a heavily overworked legal team. So that's where we add value. So we operate mostly in mid-market and lower enterprise, but as we are seeing, we're going a lot more upmarket, and that's the pull of the market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to add one more thing over here. We've been talking about value and value to the entire organization and stuff like that, but the main persona, the team that we really focus on, we really try to make their lives a lot better, is the legal team, right? More than anything else, because these are extremely, extremely smart individuals, very, very qualified and really good at their job. And they're stuck reviewing NDAs and just doing this sort of like routine work over and over again. And with SpotRaft, we just sort of unlock so much time for them to focus on way more higher leverage activities, and that's something that's that's what actually makes a lot of them like rave about SpotRaft, talk about SpotRaft to their network and so on and so forth. So while we're enabling sales and we're enabling all of these other teams, I like to really think about the fact that but how we're able to change how legal teams operate within an organization and enabling them to focus on higher leverage activities versus routine activities. That's something that we always lean into.
Give us a few more examples of some well-known names. I know there are a few on your website. I mean, I think folks will be curious since you mentioned Airbnb. Yeah. Which other companies?
Mother, why don't you go for it? We'll all talk about a few of our big favorite ones.
I think for me, the big ones are Notion and Strava, which are both based out of the US. And then in India, it has to be PhonePe because they are just using the platform day in and day out. And there's a lot more.
Yeah, so almost a majority of all unicorns in India uses PhonePe, BharatPe, Cred, An Academy, Urban Company, all of those. And in the US, it's Airbnb, Strava, Notion. We recently got into some large accounts like Panasonic, for example. So it's a wide range of industries and geographies, but most of our customer base is based out of US, and which is our growing market, and then we also have India, which is our home base.
Hmm. And as a business, are you guys doing very well now? I mean, in the startup jargon, even reporters like me have picked up things like product market fit and all of these things. So where are you at on that sort of curve?
Yeah, I think we've passed the mark around product market fit, and what we are able to do is consistently deliver over 3 to 4x in revenue growth year on year. So we are on track to do that this year as well.
Can you give us a sense of where you are at on your revenues?
Let's say that we are somewhere on the road to hit about $10 million in a few months' time.
Okay. And does it also mean, as a software company, I would think that once you've got your tech to a certain level, then expenses will be things like salary and incremental expenses on your product development. So at this point of time, are you guys profitable, or do you want to spend a lot more money on your product development and expanding your market? What's the thinking on that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of focus on expanding the product and the team and building our GTM functions and really solidifying it. We know the path to profitability maybe in about 24 to 36 months. But right now, our focus is on ensuring that we deliver the kind of value that our customers require from a product like ours, but on one side, and also deliver what we think is the best-in-class product experience and top-notch technology that powers it across all our customer base.
Every chance I get to speak with SaaS entrepreneurs, I always want to know their reasons for looking at the US market. I mean, I know some of the general reasons, for the same effort, you get paid in dollars versus maybe getting 10 rupees for a unit of effort in India. That apart from the SpotRaft specific perspective, are there any important reasons you chose to look at the US market?
Yeah, so I think one general reason across all SaaS companies that I've seen is the homogeneity of the market. US is very homogenous as a market. It is also the largest market to sell into. And it's also English speaking as opposed to Japan, which is the second largest but has barriers to entry. That being said, legal is also the operating system of the country there. People go into juridity, people are pretty clued into contracts and the law in general.
Mm.
So that adds to it. But it's really the motion of how businesses are built, how they grow, and the maturity of their understanding of SaaS platforms, tools, and contracting in general that puts us there. And it's a huge untapped market. There is less than 11% penetration across the board for CLMs in companies of all sizes. You'd be surprised that what you think are some of the most forward-looking companies in the world currently work out of Excel sheets and Google Drives to manage their contracts. So that's the state of the union, and it's that untapped market that we are out to get.
I want to also add one more thing over here, right? One of the things that definitely very personal to me, and I know it's like something that Madhav thinks about and Shang thinks about, but our goal with Spotcraft is not to create like a great product for India. You know, it's to create a truly world-class product that's spoken in the same breath as a Slack and an Intercom and so on and so forth, right? So that isn't going to happen unless you end up focusing on a global market from day one. And yeah, everything that Shashank said is absolutely right. From a purely personal standpoint, it is important for us that what we're building is truly world-class, because we're ready for that right now.
Agreed. And that's, in fact, one of the few passions that drives all three of us to build a world-class product and an offering right out of India for the rest of the world. And secondly, we're really passionate about solving this contracting problem in particular. It's a problem that's underserved. And it is underrepresented, but I think time is now for it to be built.
Give us an overall sort of general sense of your scale of operations, the size and scope. I mean, on a daily basis or a monthly basis, how many contracts pass through your platform? How many customers around the world? How many people in your team? Anything else that you can think of?
Yeah, so we have over 1 million contracts that pass through the platform every year, and that's growing at a pretty fast rate month on month. And we have over 200 customers between US, India, Singapore, UK. US and India taking the largest customer cohort. And again, the size of customers, like we discussed earlier, is across the board, but they're typically high growth companies or companies where contracting is a very essential element of their business. So that's where we add the most amount of value.
How many team members at Spotcraft today?
So we are at 170 right now, spread across US and India, and we are expanding aggressively on the team on all fronts.
I mean, I get that this question may not necessarily make sense in a products company. I mean, people who have come from looking at the IT services heritage are always asking about how many people on your in your company. And I'm at least begin to appreciate that a 5-member product team can put together a global product, not necessarily true with services. I mean, that said, are there any challenges in terms of the experience that you can find in India versus that you find in the US? And again, this is another question I'm constantly asking people just to get a sense of how the ecosystem is changing. I mean, for example, I think even 5 years back, the idea of an experienced product manager may have been a little bit alien in India, right?
Mm.
But maybe that's changed a bit now.
Yeah.
With people like you coming back and therefore expanding the that cohort in the ecosystem. So maybe just think a lot about how all of these things are changing.
Yeah. So I guess I can start. And I know Madhav has some thoughts over here as well. So you're right. You know, we're still a very, very young ecosystem in India, for the most part there, but we have a lot of potential, a lot of really, really smart folks in India as well. And there are certain functions where I feel like, for example, product, right, engineering, like there really isn't that much of a difference in talent between what you can actually find in India versus what you can like the average startup in the US, right? Specifically even Silicon Valley and so on and so forth. There are certain areas where I feel like we almost don't have the right level of experience in India to actually end up like competing globally. This could be on the marketing side, you know, maybe even in certain functions on the GTM side and so on. Our sort of philosophy when we're building the team at Spotcraft is at the leadership level, really get the best people globally for the job, right? And that part is important because that's how you end up like providing the right kinds of mentorship for folks here, right? Like for folks to actually learn from. Like our head of product marketing, he's based out of the UK. We have someone for community development and growth based out of the US. And that sort of like allows us to really like create a culture where people are able to learn from really the best in the world globally. And that's important to us. But yeah, that's what my take on it is.
So just to sort of add to that, I think one of the key sort of factors at play here is earlier, if you wanted a successful career, your option was go abroad. And now with all these companies coming in, product companies coming into India and all the VC money coming in, a lot of people are actually looking at, you know, doing a startup or joining a startup as a good career story. And that is making, you know, the smart people stay back in India and really is lifting everyone with them, right? Because if your boss is very smart, you have to sort of work at his level and that's how you will grow as an individual. And that's sort of also what Rohit is saying about our sort of philosophy is, you know, get the best person. And that person might not be in India, but the people in the team who sort of report into them might be in India, and that's how they're also growing. And the other thing is, you know, all these Chennai SaaS companies that have shown that you can build in India for the world, they have actually really upskilled a lot of people, not just in engineering, but also in GTM marketing. And that's what's been driving a lot of the newer startups that you're seeing coming out of the so-called Freshworks mafia or the Zoho mafia, is because they've been there, done that, and done it at a global scale. So they have the level of expertise and confidence to be able to do it again and do it from India, because that's how you get that cost advantage. And once you're doing it from here, whoever you're hiring is sort of learning and sort of growing with the company. So it's like...
Yeah, I mostly agree there. I think historically, if you look at the IT and IT and software, quote unquote, industry in India, the engineering and product talent pool, at least the engineering talent pool is there, right? They've worked on some really hard problems and tried to solve them. But people who sold for these companies anything other than time and effort, where that was the outcome, as opposed to a outcome of the software and the software itself, which was built, those numbers are far and few in between. Second thing is, I think the nature of the problem is, in order to be able to sell, you need to be able to culturally understand and immerse yourself in how it's done. That exposure is now growing. At least I can tell you that 3 years ago, we had a fairly tough time building that team out. There is a larger talent pool. And the unfortunate but true, the good thing that came out of COVID was, for companies like ours, we could sell remotely without having to go in person. So we could build out inside sales teams and remote teams that could sell globally and show value of the product without having to actually show up in person.
Okay, two or three questions before I know I have to let you guys go. One is, I want to come back to some of the points that you spoke about initially in terms of automating a lot of this for your customers. And you also mentioned, that you've been using GPT for a while. So give us one or two examples, any innovations you've built into your tech using GPT or otherwise, that gives us a sense of where the level of automation is today and where your customers still need to manually do something.
Yeah. Madhav, why don't you take this up?
I'll start with the most sort of problem that will resonate with the most people, which is, you know, you have an employment agreement or rental agreement or any agreement, and what do you really care about is, oh, when does the rent start? When do I get paid? How much do I get paid? You know, those standard questions. But if you're a big company, you might have certain clauses like, oh, are they allowed to put up their name outside the building, right? And those are really what you care about. So earlier it was possible to extract, you know, the standard things like who are the parties, but you will not be able to extract, oh, are they allowed to do publicity outside the building? Because that's very sort of specific. You'll have to go train it manually. So what GPT allows us to do is, you know, extract these things which are unique to customers, but without actually training or asking for data. And that's one of the key sort of breakthroughs that it allows, which is then we are able to really drive value. Like we have someone who's selling telecom equipment, like there's no training data for that, but we are able to extract it because of GPT. And sort of taking it to even more higher leverage activities, you have things like, okay, I have a set of guidelines on what a particular contract must have, right? The NDA should have the confidentiality survive after the NDA terminates, which is a very standard thing. But it's one of those things that even when I'm reading an NDA, I would have to ask Shashank, is like, does this survive? I don't know. Lawyers use words in weird, mysterious ways. And that's another place where GPT can really answer those questions, where we can say, okay, does it survive? If it doesn't, tell me, and that contract I won't let you sign. Or even better, it'll say, oh, you need to get it reviewed because GPT thinks that this clause which should exist doesn't exist. So earlier something would always be sent to legal for review because you're like, oh, well, I want to play it safe and not be in a situation where someone comes and be like, oh, this is a risk we've undertaken. And what GPT allows us to do is like get some level of guidance and only send things which are clearly not doing the right thing. So those are two specific examples. There's of course a lot more sort of generic use cases, like you give me a contract and then you can ask questions on it. So maybe it's 100 pages and all you care about is one specific thing. And it's not always written the exact same way, but GPT is able to answer those questions regardless of whether, you know, the terminology used is exactly the same. So there's a lot more simpler things that we can solve for, but those are sort of the higher leverage value adds.
I want to just add one thing over here, right? Like when it comes to like, we're like heavily investing in this space, the important thing to sort of realize is like AI, LLM, there's a lot of like hype right now around that space. What is different though is that there's a lot of work behind that hype and like promise of results behind that hype. And that's actually what's interesting right now. Our sort of thesis on it though, and me and Madhav and Shashank keep talking about it, is like ultimately at the end of the day, it's going to be about the end user experience. And hey, we can do all of these things, but what a user needs to do to accomplish those things is way too difficult on the platform, there isn't going to be usage, you know? So it's important to sort of marry like the advancements in technology with the right user experience on the platform. That's what's really needed. And I'm actually really bullish on like us using a lot of these things to further improve adoption, you know, across the organization. That's the thing that I'm really excited about, because sure, it's cool, but it needs to end up like impacting the business, both on the customer side as well as on our end, positively, in order for it to add value, right? So
yeah. So if I were to say, what will the end customer see with us or technology like ours? It is that extracting pieces of information from unstructured contracts is going to become far more accurate, and it'll have a lot more nuance to it. Second is the ability to look into a contract to understand what works and does not work for them is going to become easier. And third, which is a larger, more macro shift that's going to happen, is the current model of how law as a function, you know, within law firms, for example, is delivered, which is I will spend a certain number of hours and I charge by the hour. That model is going to unravel itself and turn into a slightly more hybrid model of, I want to show how much value I'm able to provide because I have all of this technology backing me. I don't need to spend as much time, you know, doing the grunt work, but I can give more value to the customer with all of these technologies in place. So that's the more macro shift that's going to happen.
Mm. So bringing it back to your own plans and at SpotDraft, I mean, over the next 12, 18 months, what might be your top priorities? I mean, both in terms of features you want to add, next versions of your products, platforms, and also, of course, in terms of how you want to grow your market. Just think a lot about next 12, 18 months, top priorities.
Yeah, we want to be amongst the category leaders for contract management globally. And we are on road to triple our revenue again this year, about third year in a row. And we plan to expand our use cases, not just purely from a legal viewpoint, but also allied use cases where, you know, sales can use us as a point of entry for, let's say they need to extract data and bring it into Salesforce. And that's just the use case. So we'll see a lot more different departments that will be able to use us. And in terms of pure product, I have thoughts, but I'd love to hear what Madhav and Rohit have to chime in here.
Yeah, I mean, definitely sort of leveraging a lot of the advancements in the LLM space onto SpotRock. Madhav spoke about a few of those things. I actually see like hundreds of different use cases, you know, for that within SpotRock itself. Really, you know, continue to focus on like end user experience. That's always going to be important for us at SpotRock. And that's something that we're going to never stop working on. And then the other piece that, you know, is important is figuring out a way by which the product itself becomes a huge lever for growth for the entire company. Those are like, you know, some of the big plays that we're making on that front.
Yeah, and I think, ours is a fairly complex product because you need to get buy-in from a lot of different teams. And what one of the areas of focus for us this year is to make that complex process as sort of simple as possible so that customers can start seeing value as early as possible. We don't want, you know, only after the legal and the sales team starts using it will you see value. How can we show you value even if just one person in the legal team uses it? And that's how we can sort of get to a place where, you know, we do that land and expand strategy, or you talk about product-led growth. Those are sort of the outcomes that we want to drive from really being able to show value as early as possible. So that's one of the key focus areas for us this year.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to just add on like team is at the end of the day, like we're 170 people right now. Now we're at this point where there are a lot of things that happen even within product that I don't like, you know, fully know that, there are times where I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, we built this out. This is awesome. Right. Really sort of like building a world. I think we have a great team, but continuously like providing the space for them to actually end up like learning a whole bunch, become the best version of themselves. One of the things that's really important for us, like personally, is like whoever's working at SpotRock, they feel like, you know, how much of a time they spend at SpotRock was the best decision for them professionally and possibly even personally at that particular point in their career. And technology, product, all of those things are going to continually evolve. One thing that is going to remain constant is like to build world-class companies, you need world-class people. And that can only happen through a combination of recruiting the right talent and at the same time coaching and making sure those folks are set up for success within the company.
Today, I'm thinking that your end users, they still need to have some knowledge of, you know, law or in general are lawyers when they're using your tech. Do you foresee a future where, you know, this whole, because of this, I mean, the context is no code and low code, a time might come when a general business user may also be able to use SpotRock. And I'm just thinking a lot. I don't know if this question makes sense, but.
Yeah, so you'll be surprised to know that, in fact, in terms of volumes, business users make up for a vast majority of our user base. They're able to come in and with little to no training, start using SpotRock. And building the building blocks of SpotRock on how you get set up is almost right now fully no code, or in fact, it's not even low code, it's no code. So you can, in fact, in the next 5 minutes, you can start building templates on SpotRock just by hitting one button and getting the guided tour. So we are well on that path, but I think the point of entry for us is getting through the legal team, because it is a legal problem to solve. You're selling a HRMS, you'll speak to the HR team, but it's the rest of the company that really uses it to track their attendance, you know, check their salaries, which is quite similar to how SpotDraft is being used as well. So legal team is the, while it's the point of entry and they are the gatekeepers of the product, the real use, the real usage and the power users are these business teams who see a lot of value.
Very nice. Excellent. Thank you all again for your patience with me and generously making time for me. Super conversation. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ari.
That's it for this conversation. I hope you found it interesting. I'll be back soon with another episode of Startup Fridays. I'm Hari Arakali. Thank you for listening.